Welcome to Flippers Always Win, the podcast about flipping and always winning. Episode 8. My name is Flip, your gorgeous host. And just like last week, we're going to just jump right in to our conversation because it's a long one and you get to skip the ramblings of Flip. We will be right back with Julia as our main guest after this quick message. Hi, I'm Flip, the host of Flippers Always Win. We have no sponsorships on this podcast, so in place of an ad, I would like to talk to you about ADD, something that I definitely have. It's unclear whether it's diagnosed or undiagnosed at this point, which speaks, I think, to having ADD that you may not even know if you have it or not. If you have said disorder, a 55-minute podcast conversation coming up may not be what you can handle, or it might be what you definitely can handle because you hyper-focus. I personally actually don't listen to podcasts because I have trouble focusing unless I'm seeing something visually. And so the noise by itself just sounds like blah, 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 blah. So we hope you enjoy this conversation. And if not, oh well. For all of you out there who, when Julia, when she didn't do her social media deep dive and you thought to yourself, my heart is not full, my life is not fulfilling, you today are receiving something good. She is not just doing her social media deep dive, although she will be doing that. She is our main guest today because guess what? Julia is a fan of Survivor. I had one right in front of my nose this whole time, and it took me this long to realize I could interview you as a full guest. But I'm glad you're here. How are you today, Julia?
Well, I'm a little offended, honestly, that it took you this long to ask me, but I'm good. Yeah. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I mean, you could have said something.
Well, a girl likes to be wooed. Not to be confused with Woo from Survivor.
I know your Survivor journey pretty well because it literally exists 100% because of me, as opposed to everybody else who I've had on where it was like probably 80%. I'll give myself credit for a lot of these people. But even so, take us through your Survivor journey, where it started.
Sure. I hadn't ever watched Survivor back when it first started coming out. My family was not a Survivor family. We were American Idol household. That was our game show of choice, specifically through the auditions. And then we kind of fell off. We just like laughing at people. But yeah, we didn't ever watch Survivor. I don't even really remember anyone ever really talking about Survivor in my life until you. I certainly knew it was a show. I knew it was a thing. I don't live under a rock. But you really brought Survivor into the forefront of my life.
Yeah.
You brought up Jeff Probst on our very first date.
Which I believe we have mentioned.
We have mentioned that on this podcast before, yes. But I don't remember why we were joking about Jeff Probst.
It's so unlike me to bring him up. So I bring Survivor immediately into your life in the first 3 minutes.
Yeah. In the first 3 minutes, we start dating and you didn't initially spring a Survivor season on me. It was a bit into our relationship, but we started with Millennials versus Gen X.
Nope, we did not. We started with David versus Goliath. That's one strike. Two more to go and this ends.
No memory of anything. I don't know which season is which. I don't know the numbers. I barely remember anyone's name.
But you've been surprising me pleasantly lately because that is true. You don't generally have the best memory for that sort of thing, which there's nothing wrong with that. But lately you've been like popping in names that aren't necessarily even the most well-known names from older seasons we've watched. And I've been like, okay, you're like, I don't know, but you've been doing it. You've been, it seems like you're absorbing things a little bit more than I even thought you were. But anyway, so we started off with David versus Goliath, 37.
Slow start to that season. I wasn't initially captivated but love that season. Loved Mike White. Angelina is hysterical. This is an Angelina household. We love her.
Natalie.
Natalie. Oh my God, everyone rise.
I went up like 100 feet on the ladder. It must have been 100 feet.
She's just amazing. Incredible content from Angelina.
Zero votes.
Well, you know, that's what she deserved. But
she did.
Yeah. And after that, I think I was pretty sold.
Yeah.
I don't think we rushed right into a second season.
I think it took probably about like another 3 weeks. And it seems like when we finish a season these days, that's around maybe like 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks is generally until we start another one.
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty accurate. Yeah. Right now, we're really going very, very slowly.
And I think that's partly just what we want to do and partly intentional. I would say it's a little bit of both, for me at least. You feel differently?
Yes.
We're currently on 3.
Well, and 3 sucks. And so that's far. Why we're going, in my opinion, that's why we're going slowly, because I don't want to watch it.
Right. I barely want to watch the pre-merge. Awful. The last episode where they switched the tribes up.
Yeah, that was kind of fun.
That made it a little more interesting. And I talked about this on my opening of episode 6 before I talked to Stephen and Ted. Don't have proof, but I'm pretty sure the producers were not intending to do a tribe swap on that season before the merge. I think that they realized it was so stagnant and so boring, right. Really awful television. I think they made a call midway, like, we got to do something.
Yeah.
I don't think it was like their intention going in on season 3, like, we're going to go do this. Maybe it was, but that's just the vibe I got, that it was like, we got to change it because it was so bad.
It was so bad. Also, there hadn't been a tribe swap in the first 2 seasons.
And that's right? Why I think that it was a call that they made like mid-game, basically.
Well, something that I think is really interesting is what kind of psychology goes into the casting directors and how they split them into these tribes.
Right.
Like at season 3, do you think they had established that by then? Were they just kind of winging it? They were just distributing these random people, right, and hoping for the best?
I think the strategy at that time, from what I can tell, is let's take all of the Southern white people we can find and let's put them on Survivor. And then maybe we can put a minority on.
While it was very white, extremely white.
So white.
I'm surprised at how diverse it was age-wise. I feel like modern day Survivor, there's like 1 or 2 older people, but the majority are young, like 20s, 30s.
Yeah.
But back in the day, I feel like it was much more spread out.
That's a good point. And again, not to ruin the entire series for anybody, there are some players that are older who make it deep into the game for sure, or win. But from what I saw in like the early to mid seasons that I've watched, you know, a lot of times the older or more even like less physically fit, out of shape people, as time goes on, they tend to get the boot earlier rather than later. I just don't think older people make for great TV unless they're like super quirky.
Oh, but you love Sue.
I don't love Sue. I think she's going to win the game. I don't love her. I don't think she's like that great of a personality. I don't think she's playing the best game. I'm just reading the edit as like, this is a winner. Or this is at least, very least, like somebody who's making it to the end. But Sue's ripped and she's doing great for her age, like in terms of physically and socially for that matter. She really is. For every Rudy on season 1, who's like extremely entertaining old person, I feel like they had at least like 3 or 4, what's his name, Toms on the one that we're watching right now, the old creepy to women, racist. He's not entertaining.
No.
And we don't need them.
Well, society was very different then. Things that were acceptable then are certainly not acceptable now.
Well, I don't know about that based off the results of this past election, but
in the circles that we run in, those things aren't acceptable.
For the next 2 months, yeah.
Right, right. Different podcast.
Here. So you mentioned American Idol. What other reality shows had you ever watched and what level of fan were you?
I guess I'm not a huge reality TV person. You know, I grew up. Probably the first reality show that I'd watched besides the audition phase of American Idol with my family was Laguna Beach. where Lauren Conrad, who you may not even
know who it is. You know I know who Lauren Conrad is.
Is she on Big Brother?
No, Lauren Conrad is the most famous interview that Eric Andre has done.
Oh.
Because he throws up out of nowhere on his desk and slurps it back up.
Oh, God.
And Lauren Conrad leaves the set. She walks off. I think there's only been one other person who's ever walked off, and she was the first, I think.
Well, yeah, I would too.
Yeah, no, I'm not blaming her. I'm not blaming her, but you're saying Lauren Conrad, I know who Lauren Conrad is.
Well, okay. All right. So Lauren Conrad got her start on an MTV show called Laguna Beach.
Okay.
It followed these wealthy, beautiful, white high school students in Laguna Beach, California, and just followed their drama of their lives. And then she had a spinoff called The Hills. Have you heard of The Hills?
Yeah, because of the...
Yeah, so Lauren Conrad and Kristen Cavallari, who famously used to be married to Jay Cutler, quarterback in the NFL.
Chicago Bears. Can I tell my quick Jay Cutler story?
Sure.
I used to work at a company called Livongo, which was eventually bought by Teladoc Health, and they focused on diabetes management, among other conditions, but diabetes was their bread and butter. So there were a lot of people who worked at Livongo who had type 1 diabetes. And one of them ended up somehow getting a babysitting gig for Jay Cutler and Kristen Cavallari. The story that I heard was at 9 a.m. on a Saturday, when she showed up for her first day of work there, Kristen Cavallari was showing her around, and Jay Cutler was just in his living room, just pulling whiskey, 9 a.m. in the morning on the couch.
Just so not good for anyone, but especially a diabetic.
even a prime athlete diabetic. The guy never looked happy once when he was playing, and I don't think that it was a coincidence. But go ahead. So
Kristen Cavallari was on Laguna Beach. She went to the same high school as Lauren Conrad, and then she's on the spinoff The Hills. So those were kind of the two predominant reality shows that I watched, dabbled in the Bachelor franchise a little bit. I was never as into it, I think, as a lot of people are.
Mm-hmm. What's the one that you watch now that I like? The one that
Summer House.
Summer House is good.
We love Summer House.
We do. You got me onto that one.
Yes, that's a great one. I did, you know, the Bravo shows. I watched Vanderpump Rules. I watched some of The Real Housewives. You know, again, not very religious. Vanderpump and Summer House were my two big ones that I've followed for years. And Survivor was my first real competition show that I was invested in.
Yeah. When you first started watching Survivor, and still to this day for sure, your favorite part of the show is the competitions. How has your enjoyment of Survivor evolved since you first started watching? Obviously, you still have the competitions. Do you feel as though you have evolved beyond just that being the main thing? Or is that truly where you're still at today?
The competitions are still my favorite part. I love a comp beast. I feel like those are the people that I tend to root for, except for this season.
No, you love Kyle.
I love Kyle, but I love Kyle not because he's a comp beast.
Yeah.
My winner pick is not a comp beast at all. Rachel, it's not like she's terrible in the comps, but she's fine.
Yeah.
I loved Ozzy. Physical threats, I really love, and I love a provider.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my two things that I really look for. And I think that my viewing has evolved because of you and the conversations that we have. I think more about the social dynamics and about social strategy and the gameplay. I don't think that that is something that I would naturally think about. That's something that you obviously think about a ton, and that's what really captivates you about Survivor and Big Brother. And I really enjoy those conversations. I like thinking about that and thinking how these social dynamics move the game forward. But yeah, when it comes down to it, I really love a competition.
Genuinely, it's going to sound cheesy, but it warms my heart that you enjoy those conversations that we have. And even more so, or just as much at the very least, you felt an evolution of now you're starting to see the game through that lens a little bit. Because yeah, when we first started watching, that's not where you were at. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. Everybody gets to view the show a different way. And that's part of what makes it so great. When we're talking about the show, when we're having conversations, like you for a while now point things out to me socially that like I didn't see before. And you're thinking about things in your own way when we have conversations that are unique perspectives that only come from being able to think about it from a social gameplay perspective. Mm-hmm. And knowing that that's not necessarily where you were at first or how you thought, I appreciate that you've evolved in that way. And I think it makes for a great viewing experience. The competitions are super fun. We make fun of people all the time during them. David Wright, Millennials versus Gen X. There's that one competition, if you've seen the season, where he's trying to get a buoy to stay on a surface that's sort of floating in the middle of the ocean, and he just cannot do it. It continues to roll off, and Jeff Probst yells out, "And David cannot again, David is not able to." And so that's just something that we quote all the time. We just go, "And David." So I don't want to understate how awesome the competitions are and how fun of a part and integral of a part of the show they are. But yeah, I am primarily attracted to the social gameplay aspect of it. So the fact that you feel like you've evolved in that regard and we're having those types of conversations and you think that way more than you did genuinely makes me happy.
Aww.
Yeah.
And I do think that both of our different viewing experiences, how we started, kind of speak to how we think we would be in the game.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think that you would be a very strong social threat. You are very adept at social situations, whereas I am not. I don't really enjoy talking to people I don't know. I like to take a back seat in conversations a lot of times. Might not sound like that on a podcast where I'm talking a lot, but that's kind of how I naturally tend to fall in situations. But I think I would be a pretty strong physical threat. I think I would be good in competitions. And I think I would also be kind of very helpful around camp. And I would be a good provider in ways that I could. You know, I don't think I'd be great at, you know, fishing or anything like that, but I think I would be focused on what I can do to help around camp.
And I think that all those things are absolutely true. I think you do sell yourself a little short, specifically in terms of like, let's play the hypothetical, were you out playing Survivor? I do think that you would probably do better socially than you think you would. Not necessarily as the one who's driving the vote, not the most social person around camp. But a lot of times, especially in the new age, the people who work hard, go along with the vote, keep the cards close to the vest, listen, and therefore everybody sort of trusts them and talk to them, they get far in the game. Do I think that you would win? Do I think that you would have the story to tell at the end to win? No, I think that you'd probably be like a sixth or seventh placer. I think that you would make the merge almost every single time. I think that you would probably make it past the early part of the merge almost every single time.
Yeah.
And I think for me, I've said this for the longest I can remember about Big Brother, about Survivor, since I was a kid, basically. I would either be out really early or go all the way to the end. I don't think there's much of a middle ground for me. I think if you let me get past the first few votes, I'm making it to the end. Mm-hmm. But I do think that I'm very vulnerable at the beginning. I think if people don't like me and they decide that they don't like me and they want to get me out, they can. Yeah. But I think if you let me stick around and form what I want to form, I'm going to run it, basically.
Yeah. That's definitely true. I am a listener, 100%. And I think that people find that valuable on the island. I think what my downfall would be is I am a very competitive person and I hold grudges very strongly. And I forget, you were talking on an episode recently about how in the game of Survivor, you can't be vindictive. You have to just kind of let things go.
That was the last episode Chris was saying from his own experience. Mm. And he learned it the same way that I learned it. The first time we played, we were very binary, like, oh, you voted against me. You don't want to work with me. We have to get you out. And that's what I think you're getting into.
Yeah, I would absolutely, you know, if someone wronged me in any sort of way, I wouldn't be able to work with them. That's just, let me be clear, I have no interest in being on Survivor.
That's not true. You want to be a medic.
I do want to be a medic, but I don't want to actually be a contestant on Survivor. I think the first night I had to sleep on Bamboo, I would have to be medevaced.
That's
because
true.
Because I have a bad back. But if I were in that situation, I think that even knowing how much that would hurt my social game, that is just something so deeply rooted in my personality that, like, fool me once and I'm done with you.
Yeah.
Situation.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with it. I also think that in a very hypothetical situation where you are forced to play this game, I think you might, again, maybe surprise yourself on how you could fake it. You'd probably still try to get this person out no matter what, but kind of like Sue, where she felt like Kyle wronged her, and we see pre-merge Sue saying, as soon as I can, I'm getting Kyle out, but she's making nice with him, and it doesn't seem like he feels like any sort of tension coming from her his way. I think that you would be able to keep your feelings under wraps because you're very good at doing that, but still go after who you want. So I don't think that it would be so obvious as you think it would be. I think that you're out there 24/7. You're not going to be like fuming mad the whole time. And if you are, you're going to be able to keep it to yourself because you're very good at that.
True. But that's the other thing. You know, I get very tired socially. And if I'm out there 24/7, I'm going to be grumpy.
That's probably the biggest, that would probably be the biggest hindrance to your game is just how socially exhausted you'd be and how quickly it would happen. You would need a lot of nap time.
Yeah.
And you can't always get that on Survivor without people feeling like you're either not contributing or you're just sort of isolating yourself.
Yeah, it doesn't make for good TV if you're asleep the whole time.
Are you surprised at how much you like the show? You know, it isn't exactly what you usually watch. You love crime. You love murder. You've loved shows like VPR and Summer House, which aren't like Survivor. So are you surprised at just how much of a fan you are?
Yes and no. For me, TV is an escape. I think that's how it is for most people, a lot of people. But I don't love to have to turn my brain on when I'm watching TV. So that's the part that surprises me, that I enjoy thinking about these social dynamics, because I am using my brain. I am thinking while watching the show. I'm not just sitting there passively like on my phone or something, which is kind of how I have consumed a lot of TV in the past. But, you know, thinking about the other reality TV that I have liked in the past, VPR, Summer House, The Hills, whatever, the thing that I like about those is kind of social dynamics and drama.
Mm-hmm. In a different form.
In a different form. There's no survival aspect.
Well,
it depends on who you ask.
Yeah. I would argue that's not necessarily true. You're probably fighting for your spot in the show on some level for those shows. Like, you need to try to bring the drama, but also sort of keep your relationships still upright.
That's very true. That's very true. So yeah, there are similarities in my mind, underlying similarities in these types of shows. So in that way, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So you obviously are more open to things than you probably think of yourself as and give yourself credit for. And you naturally do have all these different proclivities to different types of things. You keep it interesting. I also wanted to make sure I said the word proclivities, because in the last episode, I said the word preclusion. Genevieve has a preclusion to working with the bumbling idiots like Rome and Andy. I don't think that was the right term. I think what I meant to say was proclivity. Uh-huh. And so I'd like to correct my mistakes.
So in the podcasting world, that's what you call a corrections corner. Well, in My Favorite Murder world, mm-hmm. Shout out My Favorite Murder, Karen and Georgia, if you're listening.
Shout out Karen and Georgia.
They have a corrections corner where they, at the beginning of the episode, they will correct things that they've said incorrectly in past episodes.
And you know what? I take a lot of pride in not needing one. I take a lot of pride in being either correct or convincing others that I am correct. I'm working on making concessions. I'm working on being less of a jerk to everybody all the time. All right. So let's get into the episode. We did see Saul go to Rachel because that was a big point that we talked about in the previous episode with Chris. And Saul did go to Rachel and let her know that he saved her. And from what we can tell, it seems like she's pretty willing to keep that to herself. And it seems like it is, in fact, going to be a good move for Saul moving forward. I still think it's a dangerous thing to do because you never know what Rachel's going to do. But so far, so good for him. And I think that's great. And he needs that in the game.
Yeah, I think that was a smart move for Saul, especially, I mean, looking forward to who gets voted off this past episode. We see the Gata tribe kind of dissolving.
Yeah.
And so the fact that Saul let Rachel know, like, hey, it was me, I saved your ass, that helps pull Rachel in as a number for Saul. I think that that was smart. I kind of, before he did that, I kind of went back and forth about, well, it doesn't really benefit him to say anything.
Yeah.
He might as well just keep it to himself. But I do agree with that move. I think that was a good move. And I think it was smart of him not to make a big thing about it and just tell Rachel in secret.
Before the challenge, let's go to the auction.
Andy, once again, just never fails to disappoint.
He never fails to always fail.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He said it himself. You have to laugh at this point, right?
You do. It's painful.
It is.
It's painful. I don't. He is his own biggest barrier in this game. Mm-hmm. I don't know what is happening in his brain. I feel bad for him.
Yeah.
I don't feel that bad because he's still there. Obviously, like, something is going right for him.
He is playing a game where everybody sees him as this bumbling idiot. And again, time after time, we talk about it every episode here. If you don't get that person out early enough, they will just coast to the end.
Right.
And not only just coast to the end, but, you know, you see him now, how much of his influence is actually what is on these votes. I don't know. I think they're overstating it for dramatic effect. And if he does make a deep run into the game, you know, they're over editing his influence here. But, like, yeah, he has the capability to be strategic, flip on his former Gotta mates, go with other numbers. Like, he's a player in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And just because he can't find a scroll in the jungle doesn't take that away from him. And of course, in true Andy fashion, his inabilities work out for him in a way, because he never has to worry about losing his vote at the auction.
I know that. Yeah, in that way, it was an advantage to him. But it's just like, I just don't understand. Like, open your eyes, dude. Like,
I think he's just panicking. I can understand sometimes. I don't know if everybody out there feels this way, whether, you know, you're looking for something, you feel like you need to find something in a time sensitive matter, and it becomes like harder to find it. You start like thinking in a panicked way rather than just like a calm, where could that be? You sort of start losing your peripherals in a way. And I feel like he feels like the pressure so much out there, and he's putting it on himself, and he's simply not performing the way that maybe he could.
I'm just shocked that he's made it this far, because if you have a tribe mate who is so bad under pressure, why would you vote anyone else out before them? Because how does that benefit you in a challenge?
He really benefited from the fat two things, I think. One, Sam has shown himself in the pre-merge portion. He was a comp beast, mm-hmm, in the team sense. And he had some capable people around him. Like, Sierra is pretty athletic. Mm-hmm. Rachel is good at puzzles. And I think the second thing that he benefited from was that Sam truly just did not trust Annika at all. That they butted heads.
Right.
And ultimately, Sam got what he wanted. That's what kept Andy around. Sam trying to do the thing like Q did last year with Banu, at least for a second, where he was like, I can teach him how to play this game. I can, you know, he can be my plus one voting wise, essentially. And I think that the difference is that Banu genuinely had absolutely no idea what was going on. And that's not the case with Andy. Andy has a brain. It's not working properly a lot of the time, but he has one. And when it is working properly, it can do damage.
Yeah, he just needs to be back on his anti-anxiety meds. I feel for the guy. I am also medicated, so.
I am also medicated.
Like,
and it's easier said from the comfort of our couch than out on the island.
100%.
But, okay, so the auction happens. Sam wins food twice and still ends up losing his vote somehow. And, yeah, how do you feel about the structure of this auction? Pros, cons?
I liked the little Easter egg hunt for the money. I thought that was a fun little twist to it. I liked the added twist that whoever had the most money lost their vote. Yeah, I really liked the structure of it.
I liked the structure of the concept of what they were trying to do. And I think on some level they executed it. But I do think the second half of the auction pretty much just turned into whoever has the most money is getting this. And I feel like in the past, Survivor auctions, like in the older days, it wasn't necessarily the case. It's almost just luck of the draw of when do they stop this auction and do you have the most money. It pays to not be in the middle, I guess. It pays to spend all your money immediately. or just wait and hope that it doesn't end and then just spend it all, you know, mid so that you definitely don't have it. But then you get cash back. And then you've got Jeff talking to you as a British man. And so there's different things going on. A lot of people that we've talked to since the episode are like, why did Sierra not give Andy the chance to eat the peanut butter? Why did she give it to Gabe and Caroline instead? And like, Gabe and Caroline were the ones who got screwed with what they got. So that was why Sierra did it for them. And I'm also not sure Andy was even eligible.
Yeah, I don't know if Andy was eligible. I think that she wanted to ingratiate herself to two other people who had gotten kind of screwed over that she hasn't worked with at all in this game so far. And also, I think that Sierra and Sam were very confident with their standing with Andy. I don't think they thought at all that Andy was going to turn on them.
Yeah.
Not for a second.
And I don't think they necessarily had reason to believe that he would at that point either. I don't think that they were like missing something. I think maybe their biggest mistake besides keeping him in this whole time was the way that they were talking to him. I think they were just assuming he's a number, but they weren't necessarily working on that relationship still. They just like sort of left them be like, oh, Andy's going to be with us. Let's just go. Let's not necessarily include him in our conversations. We'll just assume that he's going to be with us anyway, which that's lazy.
Right. I mean, it was kind of like Sam and Sierra are the popular kids.
Yeah.
And they just assumed that nerd loser Andy would go along with them because he's so lucky that they included him.
Which he was.
He was.
He was.
He certainly was for a time. They really did him a solid keeping him.
Yeah.
After his, you know, implosion on national TV. I really like Sam. I've said that before. I like Sierra. But yeah, they were a little bit disrespectful, I think, at least in the edit.
I think arrogant would be maybe the... I don't know if they were actually disrespectful to him. Push back on that a little bit. It seemed arrogant to me that they were talking
to him. I wouldn't say they were disrespectful to him, but just in the way that they, like, blatantly to his face, I guess, but in the way that they were treating that relationship.
Yeah.
They did not respect him as a player. They just assumed that he had no thoughts of his own and that he would go along with whatever they said. They were treating him kind of as a puppet, as a number. I don't think they were mean or malicious him,
but I
don't think that they really treated him as an equal in that partnership.
Well, they definitely didn't because they didn't even tell him that Sam had that idol. It's unclear. Yeah. I don't think Andy still knows to this point, from what we can tell, that Sam ever had that idol. He's in the game. Sierra's out of the game. He still doesn't know. That's pretty crazy. So one other thing. So Kyle is your favorite. Kyle is absolutely screwed. Absolutely screwed.
I love Kyle.
I know.
So much.
But the minute he loses, he's won all three immunities since they got together on the island. Yeah, he's screwed. He's so screwed. I think he probably knows it. He even said it in a confessional. He was like, this is not great. Like long term, it's good for today. It's probably not great for tomorrow. Unless somebody saves him or he finds an idol. I think he's out of there.
I know. I love him. He just seems like such a good, genuine person to me. I would love for him to win this game. I don't think he's going to.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes me sad that he is such a threat in the competitions, which by looking at him, you would not think.
No.
He's like a string bean of a man. He's so skinny. But he's very good in these competitions.
It truly does feel like that he's invoking like the power of like his daughter, like to get him further in these things and to help him concentrate, helping him focus. He's like playing for something that means so much to him. And I don't think he's going to be getting too much further in the game unless he can like truly comp out, which would be an absolutely miraculous thing. I do think that in future seasons where they bring on returnees, I would like to see him get a second chance because he obviously is a comp beast. He's very likable and he's not afraid to speak his mind. You saw how he felt about the Rome situation.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's pretty entertaining. I just think that, yeah, I think he just has backed himself into a corner.
Right. I agree 100%. I think that he has the most compelling story.
Yeah.
He reminds me a little bit of Keturra in that they have a very tragic backstory and they go on to make lemonade out of lemons. They really further their life. And Kyle is trying to build a better life for not only himself, but his family.
Right.
And I think that's really admirable. If people don't remember, he was bounced around from foster home to foster home as a child. And now he's, you know, building this wonderful nuclear family and the stability for his kids. And I just think that is like so wonderful.
Yeah.
I think that helps him in this game and focusing and his motivation. But yeah, if he loses a competition, he's going to be voted out. He's too much of a threat.
His biggest ally was Tiana.
Right.
You know, Sue obviously doesn't really want him. And like the other three Tuku that are left, they don't really care about him.
You know, maybe he could link up with Sam and Rachel. Because I feel like it would benefit Sam to hide behind a threat like Kyle.
I think so. I mean, that's the fun part about modern Survivor is that the game is fluid and those types of things can happen. Is Kyle proactive enough, socially aware enough to make those moves for himself? Remains to be seen. Would love to see it because I'd love to see him stay in the game. My gut tells me no. My gut tells me he's not going to see how he can further himself beyond just the Tuku thing on his own. And right. I don't really think there's anybody looking out for him. So if that were to happen, I think it would have to be like Sam, you know, or Rachel, somebody like approaching him, which could easily happen. If somebody's smart out there, they'll see Kyle as a number when he loses.
Right.
And they'll be like, you want to stay in the game? Because it's you if you don't work with us. He could be a very influential like pivot vote for somebody if they're smart enough.
That's true. Or the other option is Gabe sees what a benefit it is to keep him around.
Right. Because
Gabe is a very smart player. I know I shat on him all last week, but he is a very smart player.
Yeah.
And I think he knows that it's him, Kyle, and Saul, and sort of Sam. Sam is a good physical player.
Sam's probably the best physical threat left besides Kyle.
You think Sam's better than Saul?
Sam and Saul, I think, are on even levels of physical threat. I mean, Sam's the biggest guy out there.
Yeah.
Which has been a point of contention between your evaluation of height. Not great.
Anyway, I think Gabe is very smart. He knows that he will be a target.
Yeah.
Not only for his physical abilities, but people are going to start realizing how strong he is socially.
Again, from the beginning of this season, it has felt like the heavy edits of the strategic players have been the women. It has just felt like a very female-centric, women are running the show.
As it should be.
As it should be. As it often is. Right. Women are generally better socially. But the one person on the male side who has gotten that level of an edit to me has been Gabe from the jump. You know, they're setting him up to be a mastermind. That's who he thinks he is. And so far, he's gotten what he's wanted every time. He hasn't needed too many. They've gone to tribal essentially twice where he had to make a decision, right?
Right.
The first time when they got TK out, which he wanted to do. And then when obviously the previous episode where Tuku got screwed by the twists. And so he wanted Tiana out. And so Tiana left.
Right.
He is the best male strategist in the game.
Which makes me think that he might save Kyle for his own benefit. You know, does Lavo continue to side with Tuku?
What was very interesting to me was that the three Lavo were essentially the nucleus of the vote, and all three of them wanted to go after different Gata members. Genevieve wanted to go after Rachel.
Mm-hmm. Because Genevieve is the smartest person out there.
Right.
And she knows that Rachel's going to win this game.
Exactly. Teeny wanted to go after Sam. And Saul, who to this point we have seen has had of the three of them, and maybe even in the game, the least amount of individual agency outside of the power that he found, he wanted to go for Sierra. Had you told me, okay, between Genevieve, Teeny, and Saul, which one of them is going to get what they want? I would have easily had Saul third. It would have been Genevieve and Teeny tied for first, Saul at the bottom. And so that was very interesting to me, who they ended up going with, considering the three of them each want different things. Also, the fact that three of them each want different things tells me they're not necessarily in lockstep.
Yeah, that's a great point. I am kind of confused as to why they didn't get out Sam.
I think they think Sierra is the bigger social threat.
Right. I think that was more influence from Tuku. they saw what a threat Sierra was socially.
Yeah, and Tuku has Gabe and Kyle, two strong guys that probably think we can take Sam.
Right.
We're not worried about Sam. He's not going to comp out on us.
Right.
Let's get the social threat out, which I think is the right move, actually.
Yeah.
Sierra is a dangerous player, just very likable, you know, very smooth. And why would anybody dislike Sierra? When you saw her at Gata, she was the swing vote where everybody on the tribe liked her. She could have gone either way.
Yeah. I mean, Sierra was great. I really liked Sierra. I wish that she had gone farther, but I totally see why they voted her out.
I think Sam, if he goes soon, I think that's a real big benefit to both Andy and Rachel at this point. Kind of like how Rome leaving is a big benefit to Genevieve Saltini.
Right. I think Sam will probably go soon.
I think he's got to win this immunity.
Remember the preview for next episode? It looks like kind of a scramble and some names are thrown out on who to vote out. And I don't think Sam was mentioned.
Yeah, I think the vibes that we got from that look ahead, which is often a red herring, is that Sam may have won immunity because he's being extremely aggressive, which, you know what, he probably was going to do anyway. He's a frat bro who didn't get his way. Trust me, they don't go play it cool. They go out saying, well, if you're going to screw me, I'm going to try to screw you. They're not. And that's why it was right to get Sierra out.
Right.
Because if you get Sam out, Sierra doesn't necessarily have that reaction. Sierra's probably going to keep her feelings to herself a little better and get in the group a little bit more. Sam's not going to be able to do that. He's not going to play it cool like that. He's going to go like full bravado and be like, I'm going to get my way or I'm going to die trying. That's how I perceive it. Maybe he has a little bit more couth, a little bit more subtlety to his game than I'm giving him credit for. And if he does, I'd love to see it. That'd be entertaining. So maybe Kyle, even if he doesn't win, could be potentially, if Sam also doesn't win, maybe that extends Kyle's life in this game one more vote. If neither of them win, I could see them all going for Sam. We'll see. I think the women are still going to control the game. It's 5-5 right now, but there's been so much talk about women working together. And I know they just got out Sierra, but I still do think this is going to be a woman-led game to the end here.
Well, something that I wanted to bring up was the vote. Rachel playing her shot in the dark, I think was brilliant. Oh, I love her. I think it was so intentional, and I don't think she thought at all that she was going to be voted out, because if she did, she would have played her immunity idol. She knew that she wasn't going to be voted out. She was not the target, but she wanted to see everyone's reactions. She wanted to see who voted what way, who she could trust and who she couldn't trust.
Right after the episode, we saw a tweet from Steven from Token Sheens, as well as Survivor Cambodia, which you have not seen yet. And he's a guy who's on Twitter and he's very involved in the Survivor community. He's very analytical and strategic, like he was on his season, has a lot of takes. And so that was the tweet that I sent you, where basically he's saying, yes, Rachel is brilliant. Like, she played that shot in the dark to read people just to make sure she didn't need to play this idol. One, like you're saying. Two, what it also does is it makes people believe there's no way she could have an idol.
Right.
Because now it's like, if you really thought you were going to go,
you would play your idol.
So she doesn't have an idol.
Waste a shot in the dark.
So it is brilliant.
Yeah. She's so smart. And you see the edit when she plays her shot in the dark. You see her looking around, looking at everyone's faces to read their reactions. She is so smart.
She is very, very smart. Yeah, I think if she does get to the end of this game, she's got a real case to win. Still don't feel like she's going to, because I feel like the same way about her that I feel about Genevieve. They're going to be perceived as threats for the games that they are going to play. And I feel like whoever's left will likely be able to get them out. Rachel's already being perceived as a threat out there, especially by Tuku and Genevieve. And that's to their credit, because I think a lot of players like Rachel in the past have been overlooked and they sneak their way to the end and they do really well. But she's being perceived as a threat by a lot of people out there.
She is. But I think that they may take the opportunities when some of these physical threats don't win immunity to get them out. I think she may be able to coast a little bit until she has numbers to start shifting things and playing the game on her terms.
And I think Sam leaving, if that happens, is really beneficial for her. I think in a way, the less numbers you have early after the merge from your original tribe, from what we've seen in recent seasons, can be the better.
Mm-hmm.
Look at last season, Survivor 44, similar. We'll see. That's obviously your winner pick. And you can't have a conversation about Survivor with Flip without talking about a winner pick. Who is your can't win?
I think my can't win is Saul, partly because he's just been set up from the beginning. He's had the worst luck in this game. You know, that battle with Rome really hindered a lot of his agency, advancing his social standing. He was so consumed by that for a very long time. I think that really hurt him. I also think that he is a physical threat and that, you know, automatically makes you a target in this game. He, spoiler alert, is my social media deep dive today. So we will talk a little bit about what I think about his social game, but I just don't think it's strong enough where he's going to be able to win.
Understand all your points. I don't think he's going to win this game. He wouldn't be in my top half of my winner picks. Having said that, if we had had this conversation after last episode, I think I'd be in 100% agreement with you. I actually really think that he's on the rise in this game more than he has been because, one, Rome is out. That hindrance, that blind spot of his is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Two, he made an ally with Rachel, who we agree is a great player in this game and has a lot of ability to make things happen. And now he's got her in his back pocket because he saved her. Three, you know, until they fracture, which I think could happen at some point, he's working with two of the best social players in this game just because they're on his tribe, and Genevieve and Teenie.
Mm-hmm.
Four, you're right, Tuku probably had a lot of influence. He got who he wanted out in this past episode,
mm-hmm.
between Genevieve, Teenie, and himself. He wanted Sierra. So I see a little bit of a rise. Chris was saying something similar last week, not overly impressed with the social game yet. I don't really feel like he's getting a winner's edit for whatever that's worth.
Right.
But he bumped up my rankings a little bit this week. I'd probably put him closer to the middle, whereas before it was on the bottom. But good transition. Let's talk about your social media deep dive.
My dear friend Avery loves Saul.
Shout out Avery.
Shout out Avery. First of all, I'm looking at his Instagram and I'm obsessed with the bio. The Saul survivor of season 47. Like the soul. You get it?
Oh, I get it.
You get it. His Instagram, he really didn't use a ton before being cast. So he has posted quite a bit about being on Survivor. He adds songs to all of his posts.
What's the one on the one you're looking at there?
Regulate by Warren G featuring Nate Dogg.
And this is a picture of him without his shirt. And he's
cutting a coconut.
Yeah, cutting a coconut. And you actually can't see anybody giving him applause in the background.
Shocking.
Shocking. I thought that every time.
He cried after.
I think he did cry because, you know, when you open a coconut, it's supposed to be just like, yeah!
The next post is a picture of the Lavo 3 that are left. And the song is Britney Spears 3. That's hilarious.
There's one that has a caption from 2017 that you appreciated.
Yes. Specifically, February 14th, 2017.
Valentine's Day.
Valentine's Day for those who celebrate. And it's a picture of his then girlfriend, now wife, kind of bending over, I guess.
She's leaning
on the counter.
Yeah, she's not bending over. She's leaning on the counter. It's not like a whole,
no.
Who knows what the setup was here?
I don't know. It just looks like she's in conversation, kind of like leaning on a counter, just like chatting.
But her butt is out a little bit.
Her butt is out.
She's wearing jeans. Yeah.
You know, it's not a scandalous picture at all. But the caption is # baby got it working all over town. # Valentine's Day every day at my house. I think that's hysterical. That is the funniest thing. I'm a little offended that you have not posted that of me.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, his social media before, you know, has some of him like weightlifting. He is a very fit man. He prioritizes health and fitness. You know, I think that that kind of speaks to his physical threat in the game.
So you Googled Saul and you found his LinkedIn.
Yes. And that to me was much more interesting than his Instagram.
Right.
His career is fascinating. The company that he works for is so interesting.
So he's in medical device sales.
And this is not sponsored. But he works for a company called Medtronic. He is in their deep brain stimulation therapy branch. And I was like, what is that? No idea. I am in the medical field. And I was like, what are we doing here?
But you, as you've said, neuro is not your specialty.
Neuro is not my specialty. So I looked up the company and I looked up their deep brain stimulation branch. Basically, they are neurostimulators. It's an implant that they have developed that is approved for patients with Parkinson's, tremors, dystonia, OCD, and epilepsy. And what it is, it's a data gathering tool that transmits data to your provider in real time about your brain waves, about response to certain stimuli, medications. When people with Parkinson's have atypical movement, what do the brainwaves look like? That is fascinating. That is invaluable information that can shape treatment for these people. I just think that's a really, really cool industry. He doesn't have a medical background. He has a business background. So to me, this technology, I could see it being a little controversial. I don't think that patients necessarily want, you know, an implant, especially this day and age. A lot of people are very distrusting of things being implanted in your body. And I could see the medical industry, while wanting to treat this population, being a little wary, you know, is the cost worth the benefit? And the fact that he is in this sales world, able to sell such a kind of tough product, I think that real world experience, that career that he has, should theoretically benefit him greatly in this game.
I agree.
I don't know if we've necessarily seen it just yet, but he could be playing the long game. Like you just said, he is kind of on this upward trajectory. You know, to be a successful rep and a successful salesperson, you need to be very socially aware.
Right.
So maybe he is going to be able to start reading this situation, manipulating it to benefit him in a way that's not so overt,
right,
like other players that we've seen. But the hard part about that is, how do you defend your resume? If he's not making these big overt moves, if he's just kind of this like subtle social player, when you get to final tribal council, how do you portray that to the jury?
And that's a big reason why it feels hard for like a Genevieve to potentially win the game, because she is truly working in the shadows. There's a lot of game left. But to focus on Saul, he has a couple moves that he can point to now. He has the advantage situation that he gave to Rachel. Again, it wasn't just him, but he wanted Sierra out. They got Sierra out. So we'll see where he goes from there. One thing I would be interested in, as somebody who worked briefly in medical sales, is you can have a pretty long sales cycle. And again, I'm not sure how long this particular product, the sales cycle would be, who they're selling to, his previous background, what the sales cycles have been. But one thing that I was, when you were talking, that I was interested in as it relates to his game is, what is his background in terms of sales cycles? Is it a short term that he's more familiar with? Is it long term? Because at the beginning of the game, what you saw was him having trouble reading the people on his tribe. And that would almost, for me, feel like, oh, maybe you are more of a long-term salesman. Mm-hmm. Maybe at least medium. Maybe short-term sales isn't really your thing. Maybe you are trying to play the long game, as you were saying, and you're not reacting quick enough. Because salesmen, if you're good at it, and he is good at it, you should theoretically be able to get what you want socially. But he was having such trouble, and it makes me feel like, okay, he's in the medical field. These cycles take a while. Mm-hmm. It's not just like selling a car to somebody one day.
Oh, 100%. And especially, I mean, according to his LinkedIn, he's been at the same company for 12 years.
Yeah.
You know, you don't work in this industry at the same company right. for 12 years without being successful. But also, I'm sure that this sort of technology is very siloed. He probably has a handful of clients that he works with, if yeah. he even is still working in direct sales. I don't know if he's a manager or whatever, but he probably has a handful of clients that he woos over the course of years.
Yeah.
And he builds these long-term relationships with his clients, and that's how he is successful in his industry.
Either way, a brain implant does not get sold like that. Because like you said, people are wary.
Right.
And it is such new technology and there's so many hoops to jump through. This screams long-term sales cycle product, which speaks to like, you know, if you're in a do or die social situation, you've got 3 hours to make your case. Maybe that's not his cup of tea.
Right.
But I feel like he's adapting. And I feel like to be a salesperson, no matter what you're selling, how long it takes, you do have to be adaptable. You have to be amenable. You have to be really, really personable. And we're starting to see now that Rome's out of the game, him be able to do that. I think, you know, they showed the little clip of, oh, he puts on Rome's shirt at camp and makes everybody laugh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of like the Sue clip from last week where she's saying, I play racquetball, not pickleball. Mm-hmm. Is that a little foreshadowing that Saul is upping his social game, making people laugh, finally being able to be the kind of guy that he wanted to be, but yeah. the thorn in his side is gone?
100%.
I hope so, because I really like him. Yeah, he hasn't had a good start to this game, but maybe it truly does speak to his social ability that despite being in a situation that probably most people would have gone home in, mm-hmm. he survived. And he has Genevieve to thank for a lot of that. You need to get lucky, but there were plenty of times he could have gone.
That's very true.
Well, really just two. But he was not in a good spot in either of those situations, and he survived both times.
And also, I can very much see Saul just being an easy guy to be with.
Sure.
He seems normal. He seems funny. He seems down to earth. Like, he seems like someone that wouldn't be annoying you at camp.
No.
Where so many people would be annoying.
And I agree with that. And I also still, even though he's on the rise a little bit, I agree that were he to get to the final three, I feel like there's going to be people who can point to more things.
Right.
And say, I did this, I did that, unless he drastically changes his game, which certainly could happen. So I don't see him winning, but I see him gaining social agency and social capital in the game. He's doing a really good job in this early part of the merge. Part of it is, you know, he had that advantage. Part of it is now he gets to be free, in a sense, with Rome gone.
Right.
Okay, well, that was a long time talking, and this is going to be a great edit for me. Maybe I think this is going to be the longest edit I've had to do, but that just means we had a great conversation, which, you know, we live together and we have great conversations every day.
No.
And so, not surprised at all. Julia, thank you so much for being the main guest as well as doing your social deep dive.
Of course.
Mwah.
Aww.
Aww. And that is a wrap on episode 8 of Flippers Always Win. Thank you so much to Julia for putting in double time, being the main guest, giving that social media deep dive. We will be back next week for episode 9. Can you believe that? With Jessica. She is, of all the guests who will have appeared on this show, the most recent addition to the Survivor fan base. I am excited to hear her point of view. It'll be a great time. Until then, I'm your host, Flip, signing off. And if I had a tagline, darn right that I'd say it right now.